just be the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, an English Premier League podcast hosted by four Americans. Tonight we have two here in D.C., and we'll have on a guest, Ryan Rosenblatt, on later in the show to talk World Cup. First things first, a little housekeeping. During the World Cup right now, we got to check in on our World Cup bracket. Jacob, how are you doing in yours?
Whew. Well, okay, not good. I am in 102nd place out of 109. Right below me is my former boss, who is following the World Cup from Nepal. So if you're listening, Matt, sorry, stinks to be you, Roger Disco Eagle, you can laugh at
yes.
him. First place and second place tied with 205.
Third, too.
And third, three people with 205. Yan-24, N. Marcus 1, Chesterman 19.
Now all remember, with 205,
folks,
yeah.
All with 205. Remember, folks, you get a lot of points for having picked the group stages correctly. In the order. That's major points out there. And if you pick your quarterfinals correctly, if people are tied at the end, we will be flipping a coin to decide the winner. Or sorry,
how do you flip? Yeah, for
well,
three.
If there's three, we'll be picking the names out of a hat. And we'll be doing it on Instagram or social media. So stay tuned for that.
This is not rigged, like Russia.
This is not rigged. I want to point out a couple ATP team members.
Well, hold on. The winners of this whole bracket get an international jersey of their choice, World Cup jersey.
Except we said, for Argentina.
We said no Nigeria kits, Nigeria. But I think we can find you one. Perhaps. I think we if that's the one you want, then I support it. I will go to the edge of the earth for you.
a couple ATP member updates. ATP Peter, 180 in 14th place.
Wow.
My dad in 18th on 175.
He's not an ATP-er. I'm in 94th place out of 109. So,
wow.
You know, I'm doing hot.
And Shay and Miles are somewhere in between.
Somewhere
I really
in the
couldn't
middle.
Tell you.
Eric, I don't know. You're somewhere in the middle probably too.
ATP Eric, 149 in 50-some-odd place. Anyway. Thanks all who are participating, and we will check back in with you next week and announce our winner.
So we'll have on Ryan Rosenblatt in a few minutes to chat World Cup. Jacob, any overall thoughts just on World Cup?
I'm starting to get sad again. I'm already getting sad. The end is in sight.
Round of 16 completed, quarterfinals this coming weekend.
I'm hopeful, but at the same time, I just want it to be drawn out. You know what I love about the NFL playoffs is they milk it. You get that whole week of anticipation, you get more coverage, and then it's over. I would love for there to be a full week between the semifinals and the finals. Really,
I mean,
draw
but
it out.
The Premier League is going to be starting just shortly after, you know, a few tune-up matches, and then we're back in.
I don't know.
I mean, for ATP, I think it's been a hot month. You know, we've had Will DeFries on, we've had Nate Chaloba on. We're having Ryan Rosenblatt on tonight.
Now, Nate's cable apparently cut out while he was watching the game, had a power outage, had to look over a fence to watch the game, either a neighboring yard or property.
Nate Chaloba.
He tweeted that out today during the game. So
good for him.
But good for him.
Still catching the game.
It's been a great month. Yeah. It's been a great month. And my only concern would be Russia being in the final versus, you know, France and having it be sort of a total blowout or, you know, something really stylistically mismatched. I want a final of heavyweights going toe-to-toe. I really want to see creme de la creme.
But with the way the bracket's set up, I mean, will you get that final with a heavyweight final? I mean, who on the right side of that bracket yields the potential for a heavyweight matchup other than England? I mean,
that's right.
Croatia or England?
That's right. Well, I'm still going with my pick Brazil, but
yeah. Okay. I really don't have much to say other than the fact that I don't understand how anybody in the world right now is getting work done. Like, if the World Cup is on during work hours, how are you getting work done? Please tweet at us at ATP Radio and let us know your thoughts, because I'm struggling. I sit in front of the TV with my laptop there trying to get some work done, and I'll be completely honest to my boss, Kate. I know you listen to the show from time to time. I just can't do it.
I would, if the listeners are following us right now, please send in photos of your setup at work or where you're watching the games. I'm always very interested to see how many screens people have going, corporate emails, charts, bar graphs, sales, whatever your setup, 3-4 monitor deal.
Construction workers,
You're watching
all
on the
shapes
phone,
and sizes.
Let us know. You're watching through the window of a bar. Let us know. On the subway. Let us know. If you're not watching at all, don't let us know. You don't like soccer.
All right. We're going to get Ryan Rosenblatt on the show after the break. Again, if you're listening to us for the first time, make sure you subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, Google Play Music, and now on Spotify. So we're very excited. We're on Spotify now. Head over that way. Give us a follow. And we will join Ryan shortly after this break. All right, so we're back, and this week we have on Ryan Rosenblatt. Honestly, Ryan, how would you describe yourself? What would you say your title is?
Just try not to mess things up too badly.
Not a bad title. I can't say I'm at that level yet, but...
I said I'm trying. I'm not trying to say I was successful.
Ryan, I'll be completely honest. You're one of my favorite World Cup follows right now. Just considering all the things that have been going on over the last few weeks, and I mean, also, you know, you used to work at Fox as well. I guess, what are your initial impressions just on Fox's coverage of the World Cup this year?
Not great. I've watched for the most part most of the tournament on Telemundo, primarily because Fox hasn't been very good with their coverage. Like, if Derek Ray and Ali Wagner are calling a match, I am absolutely all over it. I watch every match that they've called on Fox, and that's about it. And I'll hop over because I'm curious, or because I'm just like, hey, like, let's see what's going on over there. Mm-hmm. And it's generally not good. And, like, you could point at 5, 6, 7 things that are not great about it, from kind of just talent to just basic production to – like deciding to go with think what you want about Joseph Stalin. There are a lot of things where, like, you can point it out and go on and on, but I think the most disappointing thing to me is the fact that I've got no indication that they think the World Cup sells itself. They're trying to manufacture drama. They're trying to make something out of everything, and I'm like, y'all, it's the World Cup. Like, yeah, it's really easy to do this. Like, they're in between. Like, today, Colombia scores a late equalizer, and they're going to extra time. And they spend the time in between regular time and extra time back in the studio. I'm like, you want to be in the stadium. Like, yeah, you don't need to go to your talent and tell us about how great it is. Just put us in the stadium. That does the job.
We don't need to see the red square again. Like,
I literally don't care. I want to see what's going on in the stadium. Or they want to make up some Messi Ronaldo thing. Or they're trying to make up all these things. Or, like, before Messi's first game, they played 2 games earlier that day. And Rob Stone says, well, now that we got the trailers out of the way, it's the feature presentation. I was like, you call them trailers. I call them 2 World Cup matches. That's really cool. And that's not to say that Messi's not amazing. That's not to say that you can't sell Messi. You can't sell Argentina. You can't sell these storylines. But the fact that they are trying to make things and then they're also being dismissive of other things, I just don't understand. It's the easiest thing in the world to sell, and y'all don't want to sell it.
Well, it's only going to get worse as the field expands and, you know, more commentators to commentate on more games.
Oh, you're talking less like 2026.
2026, knowing less about the product, trying to market and sell and make things exciting, which are already inherently exciting. It's going to get worse before it gets better. How do you feel about Tony Meola? I actually like him a lot, but I saw Troy Aikman tweet either today or yesterday, this guy sounds just like me. Does anyone else notice that? And I kind of read down the responses from people. And, you know,
I mean, he does sound like Troy Aikman. I mean, like, if we're going to grade it on a curve, he's not bad. There's just too many times where I'm like, the thing that you just said is just, like, factually inaccurate or just logically can't make sense.
Also, listening to Meola talk about, like, shifty, like, wingers and stuff, just, I don't know, to me just seems a little odd. I'm just trying to think of Tony Meola doing step overs down a wing. It just, like...
he's a guy who's used to getting sauced over and over and over again. He should have some right to talk about flair players.
I mean, my thing with him is I think some of the things he says is interesting. I think his perspective is kind of interesting. I think in a lot of ways, kind of the way that he explains things is interesting, but he doesn't call soccer that regularly. This is not a thing that he does all the time. He doesn't have a ton of reps. He's not a guy who in his post playing career has spent a lot of time going around and talking to different soccer minds and getting these different views on the game. I mean, he spent that short time coaching the Armada and that's about it. He's just not a particularly interesting soccer mind. And that's, I think, what it comes down to for me. And then, so he starts trying to reach for more. I'm like, it just ain't there, buddy.
Hey, Tony, it's Lexi. Yeah. I'm doing this thing called the World Cup. Do you remember we played in it? What are you doing this summer? Let's get the band back together again. One of my other gripes with Fox is, and this is particularly pertinent to me, this weekend I was driving up to a family affair in South Jersey, and the only coverage on XM radio was Fox Sports TV broadcast. I couldn't find a BBC actual radio commentary. It was so, I mean, it was maddening.
That's odd. Yeah, you couldn't even see Gus Hiddink's reactions?
No. Yeah, really.
I've watched every minute of every game on TV, so I have no idea what's happening on the radio.
Yeah, it's tough.
Ryan, you know, I mentioned your Twitter. I've been seeing some things across the World Cup from your Twitter feed in particular that I want to get into. I think the first thing, though, that I have to ask about is the food and items you've been consuming over the World Cup. You know, I've seen various items of candy. I've seen a gigantic Taco Bell order. Can you talk us through some of these items and how it's contributing to your World Cup experience?
I mean, the World Cup is the best month of every 4 years, and there's no reason to limit it just to the soccer you're watching. You might as well eat all of the best things, too. So, yesterday I made chilaquiles, and then I've eaten them for the last five meals. I made a lot because we had a bunch of people over to watch the Mexico-Brazil match, and I was like, well, listen, you know what? If I'm making enough for 11, I might as well make enough for like 17 and then eat them for the next few meals.
Yes.
So I did
Zach
that.
Goldman
that
tweeted a photo of you in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean,
it looks delicious. I'm jealous.
It was great. Make some chilaquiles. Then like last night when I reheated some of them, I threw some chicken on it. This morning I put some avocado and egg on it. It's great. Let's see. Last week I made some carne asada tacos. A couple days after that, I made some barbacoa tacos.
Damn.
I've done some Taco Bell. I've had a bunch of candy around here. What else did I do?
Well, let's talk about that, a bunch of candy. Maybe you can define that for the listeners, because it is a quantifiable amount. And you want to mind telling everybody?
I mean, I eat a lot of candy in general. Like, I consider it a food group. And so...
Oh, like, where does that go in the food pyramid?
I mean, closest to me, preferably. And so I've just been eating a lot of candy. I always eat a lot of candy. And listen, if I got to spend a lot of time just sitting around here, I'm going to eat a lot of candy.
That's fair.
So, like, I mean, if you're talking, I probably generally on average on a normal day will go through two or three boxes of candy a day. And during the World Cup, it's probably been four or five.
But boxes? Well, boxes of what? Are we talking the confection?
Like,
we're talking chocolates, bars, Skittles.
All of it. Like, if I say a box, like, I'm talking about generally like a nerd size box or a hot tamale size box.
Okay, so we're talking pretty small.
The amount I'm eating. Yeah, so it's not huge. It's like, so that, and then I'll go like, I mean, Sour Patch, watermelons. I have Hershey's cookies and cream clusters. Mm-hmm. I have white chocolate Kit Kats. I have hot tamales, lemon heads, nerds rope.
My gosh.
We are not getting paid by Willy Wonka or any company right now, by the way. This is Ryan on his own volition dropping bombs here.
If they want to pay me, I'm okay with that.
Where do you draw the line with candy, though? I mean, do you count fruit snacks as candy? I mean, I'm thinking
absolutely not.
Because I'm thinking like players. Now you have like these hybrid wingers or hybrid defensive mids. Like, you know, there's no Twizzlers. I mean, that's kind of or gummies. Like,
gummies are fine, but just if you're calling it a fruit snack, you're not a candy anymore.
So it's like just that, in the name.
Yeah, I mean, like if you're trying to make it healthy, get out of here. Like, own it. If you feel the need that you can't just sit here and say I am candy, I don't want anything to do with you.
Okay.
Well, you know, if you could please write an article, I'd love to hear you compare remaining World Cup stars to the candies you just named. You know, white chocolate Kit Kat, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, Jeremy Mina, perhaps he's the nerd rope, you know, very tall, very lanky.
Tomorrow is the 4th of July. It will be the first day of this World Cup. I have not worked at least 12 hours. So by like 10 o'clock, I will probably be very drunk and I might just get into that.
Make sure you include the Swedish fish,
ooh,
Forsberg.
Well, the whole team.
No, yes. He would not be a fish. He may be Swedish. He is no fish. That man is way too saucy to be a Swedish fish.
Fair enough.
Should we dive into the football?
Yeah, I mean, I think the next thing, Ryan, we have to talk about is our favorite, and by favorite I am being completely facetious, manager on this podcast, Roberto Martinez, and his ability to advance to the quarterfinals over Japan. I saw you and a few other people get in a discussion about it. We've had Nate Scott on talk about it. Jacob is a huge hater of Roberto as well, and rightfully so.
I'm not a hater.
No, I mean, I think you're a realist, and I think it comes off as being a hater. But
hate.
What are your thoughts on this Belgium squad and Roberto in particular? And do you think they're actually set up to succeed, you know, with him at the head of this team?
I think he intentionally benched his best midfielder so he can move Kevin De Bruyne farther from the goal. I think that's a real thing that he has made the crux of his system. And you know what? If you can justify that to me, cool. Then you think he's a good manager. And if you can't, you have watched Belgium play soccer.
Yeah. So you're talking about Moussa Dembélé?
Yes. He is the absolutely best midfielder they have. It's not even close. And they're like, you know what we got to do? We need to drop De Bruyne deeper so he can move the ball forward. A thing he's worse at than Moussa Dembélé, because Moussa Dembélé is probably the best midfielder in the world at carrying the ball forward. And then as a result, you don't have Kevin De Bruyne in the final third, where he might be the best in the world.
Yeah, there were a number of times where Witzel was getting the ball versus Japan on the edge of the box and taking these horrible, horrible shots. And I kept thinking to myself, how long is this going to persist before it's Dembélé? I mean, it's not even close. Dembélé is, I think, and very underrated, and people need to start putting him on the level with the likes of Toni Kroos for his work rate, his strength, agility, balance, vision, passing. I don't know how he's not starting. It's crazy. I mean, it's absurd.
I mean, Moussa Dembélé is if a Mack truck was graceful. It's like the most incredible thing there is. The only issue with him is that he can break down, he can get tired, he can get hurt. But if that dude is healthy, you throw him on the pitch.
So silky. There was a moment in this World Cup where he was trapped in the corner, like his own defensive corner, and totally just saw somebody up in his own defensive third. I was just shocked at like the confidence in being able to do that and the composure. I mean, the guy's...
Rarely gets dispossessed.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people were giving Roberto Martinez credit for making the substitutions, of putting on Chadli, putting on Fellaini. And then I just wanted to point out to those people in those discussions that I was having, that makes him just as or equally tactically astute as LVG or as, you know, just chucking on Fellaini at the end there.
I mean, if you look at that Belgium roster, and your proof for why Roberto Martinez is a good coach is they made a comeback against Japan. I just don't understand how that is a defense. How were you losing to Japan?
Yeah.
And how did your their comeback started by an accidental goal. Like, it required an accident to get them going against Japan, who, like, don't get me wrong, Japan played really well in this World Cup. They were a lot better than anyone expected. But that team, that Belgium team is stacked. And they needed a comeback against Japan, and that's supposed to be proof of anything? I'm rooting so hard against Belgium because they don't deserve better. Like, they watched Mark Wilmots waste that team for two tournaments and thought that Bobby Martinez was the answer.
Yeah, it was laughable.
They deserve all the pain they can get.
I think this matchup with Brazil is going to present them with some of the similar challenges they face versus Japan. I mean, Vertonghen probably should move back to the middle. I don't think you can start Kompany. I think you have to bring in Boyata with a little bit of speed to protect what are some, you know, I mean, Vertonghen just got caught out so bad for both of those goals down the right side. And I think Courtois has to do better, certainly on that first one. But, I mean,
yeah,
those spaces
I
are going to be there to be exploited, and particularly if, you know, Marcelo is fit, which I don't know if he will be, but, you know, that could be huge.
Yeah, I actually don't hate the matchup if Marcelo's hurt. If Marcelo can't play, the matchup actually tilts pretty well, I think, to Belgium and gives him a fighting shot there. Just because this Brazil team without Marcelo just isn't very unpredictable. You know what you're getting. They have numbers that are back. They're never really going to be overwhelmed in any spaces. They're not going to end up with any 3v2s on the wing. Like, I think they do pretty well if Marcelo's not there. The thing that bums me out about it is the fact that, like, most likely they lose this match. And it's like, oh, they lost 2-1. They lost 2-0, 3-1, whatever it is. A pretty just normal loss. And you're like, well, Bobby didn't get exposed. Like, they just lost because they lost, because that's what happens when you play a really good team.
Yeah.
And so it's like, no matter what happens, you're like, well, they won the games they were supposed to win, and then they lost the game they were supposed to lose. And right. That's absolutely true. And then so it's kind of looked at as if, like, well, they did what they're supposed to do. And like, yeah, kind of to a degree. But like, you also probably, and listen, if Bobby can put something together on Friday, like, I'll say otherwise, or Saturday.
It'd be insufferable.
It would be.
But at the same time, but like, most likely you're just going to be like, oh, that's how things went. And it's going to be so bad. And then the thing that's bothering me is then they're going to bring him back for the Euros. And I'm like, really? So now you're going to try and run the same squad back that does the same thing, except now you're Jan Vertonghen's maybe too old and Toby Alderweireld's maybe too old. And you're still running Axel Witsel out there for reasons I can't explain. And Moussa Dembele is not an option anymore. So it's like, let's do all the same things, but, you know, with older people.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't noticed it yet. We'll continue to beat the drum for Raja Nangalan being included in that squad when they lose, or hopefully when they lose. But Chris,
I mean, the crazy thing is they're so damn talented, they don't need him.
I don't believe that.
Actually, a more damning thing is that if all they have to do is put Dembele on the field and push De Bruyne forward, that's literally all they have to do. And not that he's not Nangalan's not a really good player, not that he couldn't make them better, but they don't need him. They have everyone they need on this roster to win a World Cup. And the fact that you can win a World Cup without rightly taking Nangalan just tells you how damn good this team is.
Yeah.
Chris, another Bobby. Are you still riding the Bobby Firmino train?
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed you didn't hit us with a no look. But, you know, I honestly, as a Liverpool fan, I can't be – honestly a little happy he's getting limited minutes and that, you know – he'll come back pretty rested, but still, you know, we'll have had a nice summer on that team. So, you know, I have to think Brazil has to be the favorites now. And, you know, we just talked about, you know, if Brazil advance, it won't really be a shock to anybody. And the Belgium will kind of get the, I don't know, the pass, I guess. But Ryan, I mean, looking at the rest of the field, I mean, who else outside of Brazil do you think is the next favorite, if not Brazil?
I mean, I wouldn't even call Brazil the favorite. I would call France the favorite, as much as I hate it, because you basically have Didier Deschamps out here driving a Ferrari like it's a Prius. A Prius still is pretty damn efficient, and that team is still pretty good. On that top half of the draw, it's tough because they have Uruguay the same way Brazil have Belgium. But, I mean, I think France is the favorite here. They've neutered their team out of being fun, but that doesn't mean they're not good.
Yeah,
that's true. It's kind of hard to argue with that, although I think Uruguay are going to be a harder out than people are giving them credit for. I mean, I see this game heading to penalties. The Uruguay defense is very stout. I'd have to wait to see what's going to happen with Cavani and his fitness, but I'm just so impressed with the work rate of both he and Suarez. I don't think you'll find a more hardworking duo that is capable of producing some of the magic that they do. I mean, equally skillful, but industrious. And if Cavani's fit, you know, I think there's some vulnerability there at the center of the France defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Uruguay's really good. I've kind of been beating this drum for a while now. If you're not overwhelmingly talented, so if you're not like France,
right,
the best thing you can do in international soccer, where tactically teams are limited and they don't play together all the time and you can't buy everybody to fit exactly the role and system you want, be super organized and then just keep feeding the ball to one, two, or three really, really great attackers. That's what Uruguay do. I mean, they're super organized. They know what to do defensively. They're able to transition the ball forward and just get the ball to Cavani and Suarez and let them go. And that works really well in international soccer. And I like watching them play, even if it's not always pretty, because I appreciate the efficiency of it and they know exactly who they are. I also think it's pretty fun that, like, the heart of this team is still that like 2007 under 20 World Cup team. You still have Cavani and Suarez and right. Caceres. Like, I think it's pretty cool that they just kind of brought this team through for the last decade from the
just
from the
no Forlan.
Well,
oh, man.
I still feel like he's going to pop up at any moment, or Rios is going to come back and just start destroying people.
I mean, if Cavani's fit, I think they're going to give France a hard time. I mean, I think if Uruguay had made their way into the bottom half of the bracket, I would probably call them the favorites to make the final. They're a really, really good team. So I wouldn't be surprised if Cavani's fit, if they win that game. But I mean, I still think France is probably the favorite left in this tournament.
No chance at the World Cup coming home to England, huh?
It can. It absolutely can. I've been saying this since
January.
Come home. That team's really good. And like the biggest question about them was Gareth Southgate. And I mean,
he's been really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, today in extra time, I wasn't exactly sure what he was doing with the subs, but minus that, he's been really, really good. And you're like, oh, so this, like, I mean, you can say what you want about the Beckham, Gerard, Lampard era, but, like, I think there's more depth of talent in this generation than that one, and this might be their golden generation, and the draw opened up for them, slash they were willing to tank for the open draw, and Gareth Southgate somehow is a really good manager who is doing really good things. They could absolutely win this World Cup.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Rashford stepping up to take a penalty. Bringing him on in extra time, taking off Raheem Sterling, putting on Vardy, kind of putting trust in some of these players with not the most international experience ever, and for them to kind of come together and pull it off. That was very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of true, but at the same time, I mean, you're talking about like, oh, they brought this guy over who was the leading scorer on the like Premier League champions a couple years ago, or Marcus Rashford was Manchester United's youngest goal scorer in Europe ever. He had that incredible match against Arsenal and then Manchester City when he was 18 years old. I mean, they may not have international experience, but all these guys have played under huge pressure. They've played in front of 70,000 fans in a giant match, and they've been doing it for several years now. And I think this is kind of an area where the whole international experience gets blown out of proportion. These are guys who have done this before. They've played under the biggest pressure, and the World Cup's the World Cup. But I mean, you go out there and walk out on the field at 18 years old with 70,000 people there, or trying to carry all of Leicester on your shoulders for 3 months in the attack. I mean, these guys have done it. Like, they may not have the big cap numbers next to them, but I dare you to find many guys in the world who have been under more pressure than them and succeeded.
I mean, I agree with you. They have a lot of experience, but I would look at players, for instance, like Chicharito or Coates, just to name a few, who always seem to play better in the international arena on the national team stage versus for the respective clubs. So I do believe, at least I do personally, that there is something to be able to play in a tournament format and to be able to play within the national team setup that can define people differently, if they allow it to, than in the club's situation where everything is much more familiar and regimented. I'm not surprised that they're getting it done. No, they're certainly very capable and talented. But I guess I kind of am surprised. Now, I know they're capable of it. I'm not trying to be duplicative there and sort of redundant, but in many ways, I think they are overperforming, at least for me. I mean, I thought that football could come home, but I guess I was just really surprised to see them pull that out against Colombia today. I really thought that the game was lost after Mina scored.
There's definitely something to the difference in the club game and the international game. I think a lot of that just comes to there's more simplicity in the international game, style of play. Those kind of things, I think, can tip it one way or the other. And that's why I think you see some guys who are better internationally than they are for their clubs or vice versa. That said, I don't think it's a pressure thing. And that's where I say I'm not surprised that these guys are performing at this level. Like, is Marcus Rashford taking a shot or a penalty kick for England at the World Cup any different than trying to score against Arsenal in the middle of a title race or Jamie Vardy trying to score in the middle of a title race? It's the same pressure. Once you can handle that level of pressure, it's the highest level of pressure you're going to have, and they're able to come through. And I really think that people still, even right now, are underrating just how good this England team is. You look at the talent that they have. I mean, for my money, Harry Kane has been the best striker in the world for about 2 years now. And Raheem Sterling is one of the best attacking players in the entire Premier League. Jamie Vardy can score goals and won a league. I mean, Marcus Rashford, he has some limitations, but he's really, really good at what he's good at. Dele Alli is probably the best pressing midfielder in the entire world, best defensive midfielder in the entire world. Like, you're talking about really, really good players here. And if they had any other flag next to them, I don't think that we would be talking about them the same way. We're just waiting for them to be England.
Interesting, interesting points. One quick note, and I don't want to just sit on this topic all night, but if we aren't saying it's more pressure on the international stage, how do you then justify the Messi situation and just what he's kind of gone through over the last, you know, his last three international tournaments and just kind of what's been going through his head? Because obviously he's, you know, arguably the greatest player in the world. And, you know, it just is almost, it almost seems at times like he's a different player in these tournaments.
I mean, I think that Messi's a unique case in which he's literally one person has carried an entire country on his back, and it took 800 different circumstances to put him where he is. And not that it's exactly similar for obvious reasons, but, like, I don't think it's entirely different or a comparison you can make to, say, like, Gerrard at Liverpool and the slip that he had late in the season. And when you are that type of figure who carries something for, whether it's an entire club or an entire country, and you have to do it on a very specific stage because you haven't done it to that point, those are really unique circumstances. And so in that sense, like, Messi is facing a pressure there that he doesn't face for Barcelona. But, like, think about the number of circumstances that go into creating that specific pressure. It's not something that anyone else faces.
Hundreds of goals over many years.
I think Messi gets a bad rap. For the most part, he's been really, really good for Argentina. The rest of the team isn't that good. And, I mean, he's dragged that team to a lot of finals. And you look at some of the players who he had to play next to get to a World Cup final and to the final. And you're, like, sitting there like, oh, man, they came up short, weren't good this World Cup. And you're like, Lo Celso never got off the damn bench. Dybala couldn't get onto the damn field.
Yeah.
God, that hurts.
He's my pick. Damn, he was my pick for best boots.
They think that Enzo Perez should be starting in a World Cup. I mean, like, honestly, Messi deserves a lot of credit for withstanding the pressure to not walk off the pitch when those guys walked out there with him. Like, how the hell is Enzo Perez starting one of these? He should have walked over and pulled Lo Celso on the pitch and pushed Enzo Perez off himself.
There's so many things we could say about Argentina and that total debacle and mess. But
we're 3 years removed from them having to lose their manager because they couldn't pay him.
Exactly.
And we're going to play Lionel Messi.
Right. Diego Maradona managerial days. I mean, let's not forget that those were not too far in the distant past. And
I was in the stadium when they lost to Germany in 2010, the World Cup. And there, the moment that I will never forget is, so we're sitting there by a bunch of Argentinian fans. We're in the bottom left behind the goal. And there's one moment when Messi gets surrounded by four Germans again, as he had for the entire first half. It's like the 40th minute or so. They're getting their asses kicked. And he turns to the bench as if to say, you need to make a change because, listen, I might be good, but there are four people around me every time. I have nowhere to go with the ball. I have no space. I have nothing. And Maradona looks at him and for like half second, and then he looks down as to avoid eye contact, walks straight to the bench, sits down, and puts his head down. He had no idea what to do, and he just didn't want to make eye contact with Messi. Jeez. Messi's out here saying, we need to fix something, and Maradona just panicked and ran back to the bench. And he's like, I don't see you. He doesn't see me. I don't see him. He doesn't see me.
Ryan,
it's
Maradona,
fine. And I was like, yep, that moment right there summed up Messi's entire Argentina career for me.
Maradona may actually not have seen Messi. I mean, he could have seen multiple Messis. He could have been just allegedly perhaps tripping his butt off. Moving to the upper half, though, of the right side of the bracket, Croatia versus Russia. A lot of people haven't seen this Russia team coming, pulled it off against Spain, playing for penalties, as Akinfeev admitted, a strategy they could employ against Croatia. But Croatia's been playing really well, and I think it has one of the best squads in this tournament. A lot of itches, and they're scratching my itches. But how do you see that quarterfinal playing out?
I mean, it's tough to say because you just never know what to make of a host country for legitimate and illegitimate reasons. I mean, there are a lot of jokes to be made about Russia and Putin and the pressure that he puts on people. And is VAR on the up and up? What's the doping like? Blah, blah, blah. Sure. And like, if you want to put it on a Putin level and put it on a state-sponsored political level, sure, that's a conversation to be had. I think it's worth pointing out here that we know that Germany basically bribed to get the World Cup in 2006. We know that South Korea absolutely, whether it was them or someone else, fixed their matches in the round of 16 and quarterfinals in 2002.
Poor Italy.
And Spain. Spain got screwed by the host country and potential match fixing twice now. So not to say that it is an exclusively Russia problem, because it is not. This is just what happens when a country hosts a World Cup. But, I mean, I don't know how to account for that. Croatia's definitely the better team. Russia's not a particularly good team, and Croatia's really good. It's funny watching Croatia have probably, like, the best midfield in the tournament and five legitimate world-class players, and then just a whole lot of nothing at forward and defense. But, you know, they're still a really good team. They should beat Russia, but who knows what happens to a host country in a World Cup.
Yeah. The other fixture we haven't talked about is the Sweden-Switzerland match. And then their matchup against England. So, I mean, do you think, I mean, we talked about England already, but any chance Sweden advances, knocks England out here?
I mean, sure. Yeah, they can. Sweden's not really great at anything, but they're not bad at anything either. I mean, they're not going to gift you very much. If you open up space, they'll play into it. They haven't missed a lot of their chances. I mean, like, if you look at their XG per game and their scores per game, they're pretty damn close. They're kind of a team that's going to go out there and say, okay, try and beat us. And I think England can, and they probably will. But, I mean, if England doesn't play well, they're going to lose. I mean, Sweden dares you to play well against them. And for the most part, a team like England should beat them, but who knows if they actually play well.
Would have loved to have seen the Hodgson derby play out versus England in the next match. I think it would have been very... I mean, I think that would have been the better game, because I think what we're going to get is a lot of, again, what we saw today, which is just Switzerland just attacking, and trying to, you know, not get caught in the counterattack. I think that'll be England's problem. I mean, we saw some vulnerabilities today in Kyle Walker, Chris. I mean, you mentioned in our group chat of him getting picked off and making a couple errors. So interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that counterattack. I mean, if there's any place here that England have really struggled, it's kind of been in defensive midfield. Eric Dier hasn't played well. Henderson's made some good plays and then also some awful plays. And it's tough there when you're sitting there and you're playing with Lingard and Ali in front of them, and you're sitting here saying, all right, like, we're going to take it to them. We're going to pressure them. We've seen our defensive midfielder not to screw up too badly, because, I mean, you watch England defend, and the way that Kane and Sterling just cut off all the passing angles up front. And then you look at the range then you have behind them with Lingard and Dele. Sure. They just take away all the space. And then the way that they push their wing backs up with Trippier and Young, there's just nowhere to pass the damn ball. Like, if you ever watch the tactical cam, just pull up the tactical cam on an average play and watch that first 11 just close down space and take away everywhere to go.
Yeah.
It's so hard to break them down and find anywhere to pass the ball. But if you're going to give the ball away at the back, whether it's a Kyle Walker or it's a Henderson or it's a Dier, or if they're just going to lose their discipline at that defensive midfield spot, as they have a couple times, things will get opened up real quick. And so it's, you're just sitting there hoping it'll probably be Henderson, although he really looked like he wore down at the end of this match. I don't know if he can turn around and play again very effectively on Saturday. We'll see. Or Dier. Whoever it is, you're just sitting there hoping, don't screw this up too badly.
I was really impressed by Harry Maguire, just in his ability to sort of press the game. I never really sort of pictured him as being that comfortable and good on the ball. He was getting a lot of space today, but I thought he was really, really great in kind of pressing the game and winning the ball high up the field.
I think he's criminally underrated. I mean, I think you look at that season, his last season at Hull, and then there was talk about some of the bigger clubs coming for him, whether it be Tottenham, or there was even some Chelsea talk for a while there. And I just still can't believe that he went to Leicester. I can't believe that one of the bigger clubs didn't swoop in and take him. He's so damn good. To be 6'4", and to be able to have that comfort on the ball that he has, and he reads the game so well. And then he went to Leicester and was great again. He's so damn good.
Well, we've got the quarterfinals this coming weekend, Friday and Saturday, and then the semis on Tuesday and Wednesday the following week, and the final just after. So we're, you know, less than 2 weeks away from that World Cup final. Really excited for it. Ryan, what are you going to be stocking up with for that final game? Food-wise.
Oh, God, I don't even know. That's so far away.
What's your World Cup menu? Like,
oh, I have no idea. I mean, like I said, I've worked 12 hours a day every day for about 3 weeks now. So, like, the idea of even looking forward 10 days, I have no goddamn clue.
Fair enough.
It'll be good. I can tell you that. Whatever it is, I'll eat a lot of it.
Local cuisines.
Yeah, please tweet it out. Can we make menu requests? I mean, we'd like to get the fans involved. What would you like to see Ryan cook? We can throw
some
bowls.
Let's see what we got. I mean, let's say we play out France. I can't think of any French food that I'm good at making.
You know, just make some croque monsieur's and some fish and chips.
I'd like to see it, yeah. I mean, can you make a pierogi? What do you have for these two?
I don't actually know. I might just say screw. I mean, I haven't made any empanadas. Maybe I'll just say screw to make empanadas because they're good.
I think you just need to treat yourself. Take a day off, order some food, you know, and just relax. Just watch the final.
Truly, yeah.
I mean, if Croatia get there or England get there, seeing as I have invested myself heavily in both of them for a while now, I'll probably be just a hot mess the entire time anyway. So who knows?
We'll Uber Eats you on behalf of ATP. There you go.
I'll take it.
All right. Ryan, thanks again for joining us tonight. You can find Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Rosenblatt. L is not silent. Confirmed. Any final thoughts, guys? Ryan, any last words?
Nothing. I'm just really sad that we only have 3 rounds left. That I don't want to be over yet.
This has been the best World Cup ever.
It's been great.
I think we've had 15 stoppage time goals.
A lot of PKs. A lot of PKs.
Yeah.
It's the first time we've had 3 in the round of 16 before. And we got them in 2 days.
The only thing I'm really kind of sad about is no Asian or African teams in the quarters, but
yeah,
I got to win to get there. I guess
we got some variety though. Like, yeah, it continentally not so much, but I mean, people weren't really expecting Russia or Sweden or really even England. Belgium hasn't been here in a while, so at least it's not the same teams.
That's true.
5 of 8 quarterfinals have a chance to win the World Cup for the first time. I think that's pretty exciting.
And none of them are, because it's very important that we remind everyone that nothing ever changes.
All right, well, thank you, Ryan, very much.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
We just had Ryan on. A few housekeeping items, Jacob, we need to discuss. First things first, Wayne Rooney joins us here in D.C. with D.C. United. He was just at Vandegaarden, showed up during a World Cup match.
Right,
yeah, game. One of our friends was there.
D.C. United are in last place. I was just looking at the MLS standings.
He also said that
he's here to win.
The heat here is not bad. He's had a few training sessions, said the heat is not bad. Have you been outside?
I've been outside.
It is terrible.
Shay and I played in a tournament, 8v8 tournament this past weekend. We
it
got
is not
spanked.
Good.
We lost 2-0, 3-0. We did not make it out of the group. We played like Saudi Arabia. A lot of possession. Didn't know what to do in front of goal. It was not our best showing. But it was hot as the devil. It's like 95,
yeah,
98 on turf, high humidity.
Not good, bruv.
Not good. How do you think Rooney will do for DC United or in the MLS in general?
It's really tough to say. I mean, give him penalties, give him the penalty spot kicks, and you know, play him 3/4 of the games. He'll probably score 12 goals. I don't know.
I guess my endurance.
I don't watch MLS enough to truly understand how he'd mold in. I mean,
we're just looking at Zlatan and Beckham and Henri.
Lampard.
Body types and player types are very different than Rooney. So it's not the physicality I'm worried about, but it's the speed and where he's at with his conditioning and physically and how much he has left in the legs to sort of, I mean, it is a lot of run and gun. The possession is not always there in MLS. So I'm just very curious how DC United.
I mean, he's not going to take that team from last to first. That's for sure.
Not this year. He's not.
But
anyway, all the best. I hope to be at the opening game at the Audi Stadium.
Yeah, it's the same day as the third place match. Correct.
I believe so.
From Twitter after the England game, Jordan Pickford, actually, he didn't just tweet this. This has just been circulating. It's from 2012. Love when Twitter is flowing with all the banter. Keeps the night going.
No, great saves in that.
Banter.
Great saves.
That forearm one, you got to love it.
Also, Ospina's save on Hendo. I mean, it actually was a pretty well-taken penalty. He guessed the right way, and, you know. Although that Dyer penalty was so weak, I just felt Ospina could have done so much better there.
We have been talking about how he seemed a little, how he seems like a short keeper. You know, you think a couple inches.
How tall is he?
6'1". We confirmed, yeah. But you have to think, you know, a couple inches on him. Does he reach that ball? I don't know. It almost looked like he landed funny.
He did a tunnel.
Couldn't extend his arm.
He did a tunnel dive, rather than diving out. He dived sort of over, maybe thinking he was going to go further into the corner.
You Colombians in your tunnels, I'm telling you.
It is. It is. You know, I'll never forget my older cousins, Colombian cousins, my mom's first cousins, coming to watch me play and teaching me all the dirty tricks, the dark arts.
Not surprised. All right. Make sure you catch the quarterfinals this coming weekend, semis midweek, and the finals the following weekend. You can find us on AcrossThePond.co, iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify now. Make sure you follow us there. We're really excited about that.
Rate, review, subscribe. Leave us a great comment roasting one of the ATP members or all of us, and we will read it on the next podcast.
That's true.
Please do.
That's actually true. Please do that. Anything else?
That's it, guys. In the books.
Shake out, Fluffy.